All right. So I guess like just to start off, you could just tell us a little bit about like where you grew up, maybe like a little bit about your family, just a little bit of background.
I grew up in Rolla, Missouri. I was born in Little Rock, and so I have family down in that area as well. I went to college in Columbia, Missouri. I went into the Army for 2 years and was commissioned as a lieutenant after graduation from college, and then came back and got my master's in the same place for education, and then moved up to Wisconsin and have been around the state a bit since then.
So what was growing up in Missouri like?
As a lesbian, or
Yeah,
I didn't know
either
I was a
your
lesbian.
experience, yeah.
Let's see. I went to college in 69. I graduated from college, and I had gone to my counselor a couple of years before that, saying, "I kind of think I might be a lesbian." And he said, "Oh, you don't want to be that, because the DSM manual, the diagnostic manual, still included homosexuality as a mental illness, so that's why he said you don't want to be that." So we went back in the closet for a while. Didn't really answer my question as to whether or not I was and what that might involve, but there were the only role models were the Children's Hour. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Lillian Hellman's play was made into a movie with Audrey Hepburn and Shirley MacLaine, and one of them kills themselves because they're accused of being lesbians. I don't know. You never know whether they are or not, but so that's really not the best role model. So you didn't want to be one of those anyway.
So what was the army like?
Well, it's very interesting because I had a ball. I went in as a college junior. They had a special program, and then for your senior year, you were actually in ROTC, but not with the guys, and not didn't have to do anything really other than make a commitment after graduation to be commissioned as an officer and then serve for a couple of years. So when I went as a college junior, I just always been curious, and then my mother's sister and three brothers had all been in the military, but her sister being in the military was kind of maybe against the grain, or but she wanted to since her brothers were, and that was during World War II. So I kind of had those kind of role models, and I met some wonderful women in our college junior program. It was just 1 month, and I figured I can make 1 month of anything. So that was an easy way to find out about it, and we just had a great time, and all of us decided to go into the student officer program, and from all over the country, and we even got together, a bunch of us, at that Christmas. So it was just a real bonding time. Turns out that out of my core group of friends, probably all but one or two were gay. Ended up being gay, but there was one couple that was out. Well, one partner of a couple that was out at the time, and the other partner didn't think she was gay. And I don't know that they were partner, but they were just very good friends. So it's just a very strange time and kind of evolution of knowing who we were, each were. So years later, it comes out that we're all in the same program here in the community.
So what was that like? What were the attitudes like could that you could sense, like, in the military?
Oh, well, there was kind of this rumor or general attitude that a lot of women in the military were gay. I kind of didn't know about that necessarily ahead of time, so it wasn't general information, maybe, but in the military. And, you know, sometimes people would talk about so-and-so is or isn't, or do you think, and we just kind of didn't pay any attention to what maybe the rumor mill or and we just were having fun and did what we wanted to do. And we were the because we were officers, we were training officers, we were the leaders, so it was kind of fun. We were running the place. Yeah. Well, I mean, we all had captains above us, but we were the main runners. Now, at the time, a person could get out of the Army by saying that they were gay. And I remember, as an officer, I had to prosecute or investigate, at least, a couple of privates who were accused of being gay. And that was so strange. You know, I did my job. I gathered information. I don't even know what happened to them. But I think that we advised them that, you know, they could just opt out of the service and not have anything go on their record, kind of. Otherwise, it could be a dishonorable discharge.
Yeah.
So... I think that was just solid, but that was very strange. But I didn't know about myself either at the time. I just felt like, what crime is there? You know, as long as people are consenting, then that would be true for any sexual contact with anybody. So, years later, I kind of felt guilty about it. You know, it's like, oh, I participated in that.
Yeah.
What year was that? Do you remember around what time that was?
I served from, I graduated and was commissioned in 69, June of 69, and got out in 71.
Okay.
So it was the Vietnam conflict. I had a National Defense Medal.
Wow.
I don't remember being asked. I know in the movie, Margaret Krammelmeyer was asked if she was gay. And that might have been a higher security clearance. I don't think they had gotten to that point yet. It was just sort of assumed nobody was.
So how did that work that... you had to, like, interrogate these people? Like, what was the system around that? If someone was suspected to be gay, like, what was that based off of?
Right. Letters that had been found. I don't know whether there was eyewitness. It's a little foggy yet in my memory. But, so I had to go and interview the person and gather information. I can't even remember actually which side, whether I was defending her or so. Maybe since we were advising them to just opt out of the service, maybe we were defending them because somebody's appointed, you know, to do that.
Right.
But, so I don't remember too much about it. There wasn't a hearing. So I don't know if they just decided to sign off and that took care of it kind of quietly.
And so you said that kind of like the higher up group of officers was like a lot of, women.
Was
that unusual for
the
time?
This was
the
Women's Army Corps. This wasn't when it was later it was integrated into the Army. Right.
And that was around the same time, so like 60. Okay.
Right.
So what did you do when you got out of the Army? You went to school.
Right. Well, I had a degree my bachelor's degree was in technical theater.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of really didn't know what I was going to do with that because I wasn't brave enough to go to New York and
mm-hmm.
be in
mm-hmm.
a union. And I didn't really want to travel all over the country with some kind of traveling troupe.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of didn't know what. But I hadn't wanted to go into education because I was shy and didn't like, well, in the Army, I had to be an instructor.
Mm-hmm.
It was
yeah.
a training battalion. So they taught me how, and I thought, oh, this isn't bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a benefit of being in the service, that I gained a lot of confidence and liked trying to make it interesting to the people that were listening.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back to school on the GI Bill.
Okay.
And, got my master's degree in special education. I saw an ad on TV for the visually impaired, and I thought, that sounds interesting,
mm-hmm.
you know. And when I went to back to my school to find out, you know, would I have to get a whole new degree
mm-hmm.
or how would that work,
mm-hmm.
and found out I just needed 15 hours on top of the master's degree to get an education degree. But they didn't have education in the visually impaired. So, they encouraged me, I think, to go into the field of emotionally disturbed, and my mom was diagnosed with, it was called manic depressive at the
mm-hmm.
time, now it's bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
So I was interested and curious about that area and decided to go into it, and that's
mm-hmm.
what I ended up doing. So,
mm-hmm.
got my education.
What can you talk a little bit about what that work was like?
Well, the schoolwork or teaching in emotionally disturbed?
Well, I guess I would say, like, going to school, what did you feel like the environment was like, the attitudes were like on LGBTQ issues in school?
Nothing was ever talked about.
No.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I think the first time there were public discussions about gay and lesbian issues
mm-hmm.
was when Clinton ran for office, and he's in 92,
mm-hmm.
and he started talking about don't ask, don't tell. And I think those were the first open discussions I'd ever
mm-hmm.
heard. And I went to school with a person I became a really good friend to, and that evolved into a sexual relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I still didn't call myself a lesbian because
mm-hmm.
that was a bad word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
so, you know, and that was before I graduated and went into the military. And in the military, I had a really close friend. We did not have a sexual relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That first relationship was afterwards when I was in my master's program.
Okay.
Right. So there was an evolution there
mm-hmm.
for myself as well.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. I don't remember, you know, there were certainly no organizations
right.
that could be supportive.
Mm-hmm.
It was like non-existent for public discussion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There weren't any fights for rights. Of course, it was what? When was Stonewall? 70? Something 71? In there. 71?
70s, late 60s, 70s.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So that's
mm-hmm.
about the same time, and I never heard about.
Right.
Well, I was living up here in 76
mm-hmm.
to 79,
mm-hmm.
and so I know Harvey Milk died somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Never heard anything about
mm-hmm.
that. You know, it wasn't covered in the news or on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Years later, I saw a documentary about it
mm-hmm.
And thought, where was I? Why didn't I know about
right,
this? You
right.
know? And it's just,
mm-hmm.
mum was the word. I didn't
yeah.
know about Stonewall till years later.
Mm-hmm.
All those historic moments
Yeah.
It just wasn't public knowledge. You know, it was between individuals, you know.
Right.
Now, after I got out of the military and was in a relationship, my girlfriend and I flew to Atlanta to visit some of those old friends, and they went out to a gay bar. I did not want to go, but I never drank either. So it's like, what do you do in a bar, you know?
Yeah.
I always had a hard time about that.
Yeah.
Thought I should drink, but I just survived it. So, and several of them were in relationships and considered themselves gay at that time. So, that was kind of the first gathering of openly, well, open to the group at least, gays.
Yeah.
Because the group, and that's a picture of my group of friends in the military. We used to sit around and several of them played guitars and they wrote songs. And so we would spend our off time together in gatherings
that's
like that and eating together and stuff. So,
a great photo.
So in that group, there were couples. You were roommates, you know, and you didn't know what roommates do. And nobody talked about it within the group either, you know. So it was a very closeted time.
Why do you think that was, that even within your friend group, people didn't feel like they could be out?
Well, you know, it's hard to know whether they were out or not.
Right.
You know.
Right.
I've talked to a couple of them afterwards, and they did not know at that point in time. So there wasn't something to talk
about,
you know, really.
Right.
Maybe talk about feelings, but here.
Not. Yeah. So were there?
And I think, you know, the country was so hush-hush about it. You had no support anywhere openly that you could turn to, or, you know, because what if you came out and talked about that and then here your best friends got upset with you. But we did have one in the group who was acknowledging that she was a lesbian, and we were all okay with that. So there was acceptance, but I think we just didn't know what we were doing.
Right.
Who we were. And it's hard to know. I mean, you know, how do you know who you are? You're just discovering, and if you don't see any role models that you want to emulate, you don't want to kill yourself, then it's tough.
Were there other spaces? So you talked about going to a bar. Did you go to any other bars ever, like, in this community? Or what? How is that different from the spaces here?
Well, when I lived here, again, there was no community. When I went out to a bar, it was with educators, teachers, after work, kind of mixed company, you know, heterosexual. Assumed. So, and I don't go to bars now. Even with a very out partner last year, that just wasn't part of our. But the bar dances here are very friendly. I know a lot of people, and I started bringing friends and that were gay, and they were just very accepting. And then barn dances, you know, everybody, a lot of females dance together because there's never enough guys. And the gay guy that used to go with us all the time really lamented the case that there were never enough guys, so he couldn't just dance with another guy. Although in bar dancing, you do swing a and you know, Alaman left or whatever, you know, folks in the circle. So So that was, but the whole community is very closeted still to this day. I've been the leader of the local PFLAG group since 95.
Yeah.
And few people would come to meetings. Now, a lot of people would, parents would tell me that they had gay children who had moved away. But they were supportive. So I could count on them if we needed funds for something or for support or needed parents to go to a school board meeting because the local school board was doing something that they needed to be questioned about. And but everybody knows their gay-owned businesses in the county, and every 4th of July, we have a 4th of July parade in Bailey's Harbor. And so, in 09, we started having a contingent in a PFLAG there. The first year, we had like 16 people who walked and held signs and rainbow flags, and that was wonderful. The next year, nobody said they would go, and so we didn't. And some people in the community said, hey, we missed you. Where was your PFLAG group? And so since then, we've been back, but it's just been me and one other person that's said, okay, we're going to make an appearance. So I write my car, and we put the banner across it and have rainbow flags sticking out of it and stuff. And whatever the theme is, I have to find out what the theme is this year because it's coming up on me fast and I haven't got the word out
yet.
So we have a deadline for our newsletter coming up that I need to meet. But last year we had three cars, two antique cars with people in them, and then some people walking too. So it's coming back up a little bit, but you kind of never know around here. But it's certainly a core group that's goes to the meetings and does that sort of thing. Now, a few years back, before this Bailey's Harbor parade started, a couple of young folks came to the county and contacted me and said, where's the gay pride parade? I said, you gotta be kidding me. If we had a gay pride parade, nobody would show up. But I said, if you have one, I'll be there. And I guess they decided not to try it. But so it's, you know, I don't want to discourage people, but there is a reality here. And I don't know what it is. You know, the whole county usually votes conservatively. So, but there's so many artists and so many people. I'm surprised that they vote conservatively, actually.
So how did you get involved with PFLAG? How did you become it? An activist.
Well, I started out being an activist earlier. In in the early 80s, I was an activist for disability rights and had gone to a conference as an educator and learned all about the disability ADA requirements and got an elevator in Sebastopol up here.
Then
went to Madison and filed a civil rights complaint to get equal time for kids because at the middle school they dismissed an hour earlier those kids because they needed supervision during lunch, and it was something with the supervision that the teachers had had enough, so they got to send him home early. And I was like, but these kids need more education, not less than and we parents, you know, have difficult time enough trying to get child care for after school if we're working. So changed the Madison school thing. So I was an activist first, and then when I moved up here, I was looking for some type of gay group or support group, and met some people in the Fox Valley who had PFLAG groups, and thought, well, that's parents, families, and friends of lesbians and gays, so maybe that would be a little more acceptable, you know, anybody could be a friend of. I was a friend of a lot of gays.
Yeah, right,
so
yeah.
You didn't have to come out. You know, it was kind of like a gay, like there's now a, Green Bay has a gay straight, adult gay straight alliance. So they just kind of formed their own thing and they're not affiliated with anybody. But that idea that, you know, it's not clearly a gay group, like the Gay and Lesbian Task Force something like that. So it seemed innocuous enough. But in 95, I started being a representative and kind of went through the formal paperwork. And in 98, we had a student call, or a young man call us, and he did. He thought he was the only person in the world and thought, so... There were just a few of us at the time. We decided to meet regularly, have a chapter, and it was Ellen's coming out on TV, you know, so it was a really big push for awareness. And so that, and sometimes it was just me and one other person that met each month, and different people would come all the time, but never a group. And now it's finally a group of maybe nine regulars, and two of them are retired teachers and counselors, so they are our safe schools coordinator, and the schools have invited them to work with their, on many areas, but they include the PFLAG element in it, so it's kind of gained respectability, I think. I think they just thought I was a crazy person pushing an agenda for a long time, but
So how has the community here received PFLAG or other LGBT organizations? Or
there are no other organizations, I don't know if that's because, but the county population is only 26,000, so that's a small town, but it's spread out all over, you know, a long county too. And it's hard because it's very isolated. There's no other counties, you know, surrounding it, so you can't look to those for more. Back in the beginning, I tried to, like, put information in the paper, and they wouldn't. First, they'd say, you know, I'd, like, PFLAG National had a hotline one day when they had an open toll-free line that anybody could call in. And I tried so hard to get that in the paper, and they were like, well, that's a national thing. And it's like, yeah, but there's nothing here. Where else is somebody going to get some information? And, you know, they just stalled and didn't put it in. And
Even for money, you know, like whatever you had to pay to put it in there?
Well, I don't know that I tried taking out an ad. That would have been a good idea. Although, I think the Green Bay paper might have refused some. It's a pretty, at least years ago. So I was on this guy all the time about even announcing meetings when we started to have our meetings. And it's, oh, I guess it got lost somewhere, you know. And then I, next month, it better be in there next month, right? Do you have a copy, you know? And so maybe it'd get 1 month, and then the next month, if I didn't hound them, it was gone again. It was like, give me a break. So, and I don't know. I, you know, I finally said, let me talk to the publisher. And then he said, well, I'll talk to him and get back to you. And then he said, we'll do it. But, and then they were better. I've kept a record of all the times that it didn't appear, and trying to figure out why, you know. Does somebody new come on the staff and think, eh, we don't need that? But, like, we're celebrating our 15th year this year. So 5 years ago, we had a big picnic and celebration and took a big picture of everybody, and that got in the paper. So.
That's great.
So awesome. There's progress.
Yeah.
Little
mm-hmm.
steps, but.
So I'm wondering about during the time when people maybe were starting to come out more openly, or people were talking more about LGBTQ issues, what was the difference, if any, that you saw between gay men and lesbian women? Do you think there was, how do you see sexism play out in the LGBTQ community?
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. I don't know that I have much comparison.
Mm-hmm.
I think basically around here, the gay men have done a whole lot of partying, and sometimes they have their bars that they go to as a group. The women are more likely to have a potluck. They'll have a party, but it's at somebody's house. So I don't know if that's a difference. We have more. There's not another gay woman attending PFLAG, hasn't been for once or twice somebody will come. But so they're all guys, except we have some parents. So, you know, whether I know there are a lot of lesbian couples in the county. Some of them were very active, like in the 60s and 70s in different groups. But now they're done. You know, they've been there, done that. They're doing their own thing. Now they've got grandkids or whatever. So I can't speak to that a whole lot, really.
And, well, when you were talking earlier about the play, you're talking about role models in the media, and you mentioned Ellen DeGeneres is coming out, and how do you think that media has changed over time in portraying lesbian women, and what was Ellen's coming out like?
Oh my gosh.
In the community?
It's almost this historical as President Obama coming out for same-sex marriage. I mean, that is incredible to have gone all these years and heard presidents and all those congressmen who say such horrible things about a group of people in their country. You know, it's incredible. So to flip that over and have the president saying it, that's how it was for Ellen. It was like, You knew the buildup. I taped every little spot that she did before she came out, because she'd do these little spots of hints about what was going to happen, you know, and there was this huge buildup for it, and it was just fantastic, you know, to anticipate that, and people borrowed that tape from me. As a matter of fact, I'm not sure I got it back. I moved too, so I'm not sure about that. So that was just incredibly exciting, in that we had an Ellen coming out party to start our PFLAG chapter, and we had about, I think we had about 16. That seems to be our max number. But, and people said, yeah, we should have regular meetings and be there for people. And years later, I had people that would come to the meeting who had seen our sign in the library saying that we had our monthly meeting. You know, and that alone, just seeing it, helped them know that there was somebody else, you know, even though they didn't come or whatever. So I think that is important.
Do you remember what year that was that
Ellen came out?
Yeah.
Was it 97? I think it was 97,
mm-hmm.
May of 97. Mm-hmm. So it was, well, in the media, you know, Time Magazine, yep, I'm gay.
Yeah. Exactly.
That was incredible, although shortly after that, she disappeared.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, the show
mm-hmm.
was canceled
mm-hmm.
and whoa. So it was kind of like the whole movement, I think, has always been two steps forward, one back. You know, you keep making a little progress, but
mm-hmm.
it's never full throttle forward.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, the fact that the NAACP came out and made the follow-up statement too. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think
mm-hmm.
there is momentum. We have mortality on our side. You know, the young people coming up were
yeah.
so different than we were
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
Soon all of us will die off that
mm-hmm.
all of those anyway that are so negative or
mm-hmm.
or, you know, well, I worked for community programs here in the county
mm-hmm.
as the Britta III educator for the last 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first came, I was working on them as well. Wisconsin was one of the first states to have non-discrimination for sexual
mm-hmm.
orientation, not
mm-hmm.
for gender identity.
Yeah.
But not only was that for employment, I mean, and here the community programs is a counseling agency,
mm-hmm.
and there were, at the time I came in, maybe four counselors, and two of them were homophobic.
Mm-hmm.
And one was a Boy Scout leader.
Mm.
And I sat down
mm-hmm.
and talked with him. I talked with our boss about it and said I was concerned about, you know, if somebody comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And I put together a notebook of information and kept it all 16 years. I don't know what happened to it
mm-hmm.
now that I'm gone. But
mm-hmm.
Kept updating it with information, would do in-services for, because we were supposed to in-service our staff members
mm-hmm.
about different topics.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was a big one that I was always trying to make them aware of and
mm-hmm.
bring up. I think
yeah.
that guy softened in his homophobia.
Mm-hmm.
I
mm-hmm.
wouldn't say that it was gone, but we were friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, people that are coming to counseling probably have some problems.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, when you have a society such as ours, you
mm-hmm.
create those
mm-hmm.
problems.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily a personality disorder.
Right. Right.
Although I'm sure there are people with personality
mm-hmm.
disorders who are also gay who,
mm-hmm. yeah.
you know,
right.
complicate the matter. And
right.
mm-hmm.
that was back in 73 was what the American Psychological Association
mm-hmm.
realized was that
right.
they're seeing sick people. And if you studied all gays that you could find,
yeah.
I'm not sure how they did that back
yeah.
then, but
mm-hmm.
that it wasn't an illness. So,
yeah.
It was different times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how is this community how have you seen it change over time in terms of LGBTQ issues? Has the attitude changed at all, or
think it has changed, but I don't know that there's a lot that is visible to see.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I first moved here for the second time in 91,
mm-hmm.
I was with a partner, and she had three kids who were in high school, and so
mm-hmm.
we were, well, in 95 we were very careful about how out we were
mm-hmm.
Even with the organization
mm-hmm.
it was was kind of like took till that point in time, because some of the kids had graduated by then, or maybe all of them had moved away by then. And so then we felt like, okay, I could have my phone number and as contact information out there to the public, but we didn't do it before for their sake. Now, sometimes, you know, you feel like everybody must know, but we keep running into people who never knew or never suspected. And then others who the kids, you know, were going to school with, and we weren't that far out, but they were open about it, you know. So, there was never a problem, you know, like different parts of the country. People have been killed. People have been beaten up or threatened. And that never happened. Now, early on, there was a guy that wrote like seven sections in the letters to the editor about Sodom and Gomorrah and the sin of homosexuality, and he went on and on, you know, lengthy to their max, I guess, and that was really bad, and nobody else commented on that or said, you know, countered his comments at all. We had a hate crime here. The Chanticleer guys are really in good shape, and they like to party, and they were in a bar. And I guess they've had bar fights before, so that doesn't bode well for their management of behavior. But in this particular situation, five guys started it with them. The thing is that one of the guys really got badly hurt, not the Chanticleer guys, but the other guys. So they went and reported it to the police, and the police took interviews and found out that they didn't, that the gay guys didn't start it. They just finished it.
Right.
And I don't think anybody got, there was a big trial. I don't believe that anybody got charged with anything more other than maybe a misdemeanor, and I'm not sure that that even stood up in the court, because some family members changed their story from the first time they spoke up. But I did a letter to the editor, because there were a lot of letters saying, you know, how could this be? This kid is really injured, and, you know, you should have seen his face when he, like, well, if you start something. It just so happened that these two guys were in really good shape, and it didn't turn out like Matthew Shepard, who, you know, was in the mix not that long ago either. So it was interesting that, so I did, I got two phone calls, one from a relative of the guy that was injured saying, how can you say, you know, and then one from, well, no, that was another time. We have a high suicide rate in Door County. We have a high alcoholism rate in Door County. We have a high youth suicide rate. And we had like five suicides, mainly around Sevastopol in one fall. And so the paper did all these articles about suicide and suicide prevention. Never once was homosexuality mentioned. Sexually, gay and lesbians are four times more likely to attempt at least suicide. And when you look at all the factors involved in trying to prevent suicide, it's having a safe person to come out to and talk to about whatever's bothering you. You know, it's like a gay kid doesn't have that. They can often be kicked out or disowned because if they do come out. So, you know, I wrote a letter to the editor about, you know, all these articles are wonderful, but they don't mention gay and lesbian. So I gave them those facts and information. So that's another time I got a phone call saying, thank you. I am sure that one of those kids at Sevastopol was a relative of mine, and his father was not accepting, and I'm afraid that's the reason. So, you know, that really, you know, those little things keep me going, even though it's terribly slow progress here.
When were these suicides?
I probably have the article so I could look up the date, but maybe around 2000.
Okay.
Because we had our meetings and
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, somewhere either.
When was the bar incident?
I got that article too. Let's see. It was maybe 06 or somewhere around
okay.
there.
Were there other events you're aware of in this community prior to, you know, like in the 70s or 80s or, you know, when you were here in Edmonton?
Right. Well, I was here in 76 to 81 in this community, and then I moved away to adopt my son, and then I came back in 91. And, you know, I don't think that anything was reported as I mean, gay just wasn't mentioned. When more recently, when those suicides were happening, they formed a committee, and I went to those meetings, and I would be always the one asking the question about how does this affect gay and lesbians, and they're like, oh, we don't have any gays and lesbians. Oh, and one minister said, we don't have to worry about that because Will and Grace is on TV. It's like, oh yeah, that takes care of everything, right?
What is the religious community like here?
Really bad. I belong to Hope United Church of Christ here in town where we have our meetings. And that is probably them. One of the most liberal. Now, the UU up in Sister Bay, or Ephraim, is very liberal, too. Our minister, who was a minister for years before we became open and affirming, couldn't get anybody to talk to him, practically, any of the other ministers. Back in the early 90s, I was on the AIDS task force. Locally here, and they tried to do an in-service training for the pastors, and he was the only one that attended, you know, so kind of any concern about those issues. Now, the Methodist Church here has been interested in, I forget what the Methodist Church call it, but they have a reconciling, I think, is their term for dealing with gays and lesbians, being open to gays and lesbians. They're considering making that step. I don't know what it's involved in the Methodist Church. And the Moravian Church was where that young man went, and he was very concerned about their reaction to his coming out. And yet, I think they were listening, you know, not supportive, but not condemning. Now, I remember I lived here in 76 to 81. Sometime in that time, I do remember at the church, which is Wisconsin Synod Lutheran, which is the strictest Lutheran church here in town. I think it was a Reverend Boggins or something like that, who someone came to, the, you know, the story was floating around town that someone had come to him saying they were gay, and he said, "You're going to hell," and so they killed themselves. You know, just kind of, that's the story that was there. So that is something I do remember from before.
So you're on the AIDS task force. What was this community's response to HIV in the U.S. In the 80s?
So, well, this was not until, I wasn't on there until 92.
Okay.
So kind of late in the AIDS epidemic, and yet this community was very slow to warm up. Now, we had Mike Johnson and his wife Sherry come and speak. He was I think he died, a heterosexual male who had contacted it. I don't know if he even knew how, and then infected his wife before he even knew. So they were going around Wisconsin speaking to groups. So they were more acceptable, you know. We had a young man who had grown up in this, in Egg Harbor community, who had gone away to Milwaukee, came back, had AIDS, wanted to speak to groups in the county, and nobody really wanted to hear him, you know. The AIDS task force by that time, though, had disintegrated because we didn't really provide services. We were more of an awareness group. People went to Green Bay to get services. Now, I think the Wellness Center does. I think they can do anonymous testing. So that's good. But a lot of people go out of county anyway to... for fear of confidentiality and that sort of thing. So, but slowly but surely, I think now the Wellness Center has been able to get into all the schools for HIV prevention discussions. But that's just in the last few years. It's so the community is very conservative.
What's the, in the schools, what is, what it, is the reaction of that? Like, is there backlash from people's parents or educators about
talking about it? There is to some extent, you know, and I think they always have to allow opting out of those kind of educational programs. Several people have worked with schools trying to get sexual orientation even in the discussion about health and wellness. So it's pretty, well, we'll have like a senior come to us in PFLAG and we try to encourage them to start a gay-straight alliance. Their schools put them off and just drag their feet. I don't think they say no anymore, but sometimes they may. And they just wait till they graduate, and then there's nobody else that's coming along to, you know, make a scene about it until they're a senior finally, and they finally get up enough nerve to try to do something, and then they just wait them out, you know, put them off or whatever. So we still don't have any gay-straight alliances in the county.
Do you think that's going to change? Do you think it is changing?
I don't know. The Sturgeon Bay schools did we had a student come to PFLAG, and we and he came with two friends. So we said, you know, you guys can do a gay straight alliance, and we'll support you in any way we can. But you, it has to come from you because it's in the schools. And I think they even had a counselor who came to our PFLAG meeting and was, well, they ended up forming a diversity club. So they wanted to celebrate all, because the schools have had diversity fairs and not included gays and lesbians. And a few of our parents have like, where are the gays? But, you know, they just ignore them. And, oh, next time we should do that. And their student isn't there next time or something. So they don't even get caught on that. So, but, Rudy Senarigi, the counselor that I mentioned before, did tell the school district that he could get the, I think he talked to them about, he could just call Lambda Legal and they would get somebody up here to help. And he said, oh, we'll handle it, but they don't have a club yet. So I think Rudy's still working on it kind of slowly. It's like, okay, now we have to wait for the next person to come along. And, so, I don't know that it's changing.
Do you see a trans community or a genderqueer community here at all?
Yes.
Okay.
They'll call, sometimes they'll, you know, they'll call and say, would it be okay if I came dressed up, you know, to the PFLAG meeting? And yes, you know, everybody's welcome. But usually they don't show up. Now, we do have, as a matter of fact, the Methodist minister's son is transitioning. He has talked to the congregation twice now. He does an excellent job. She does an excellent job speaking. Sharing information. She invited all of us to come. She she started coming last January, a year ago, January, to our PFLAG meetings. So we've kind of followed her. I think she wrote me first trying to find medical care. And so then I put out my feelers to everybody. And, well, actually, no, I think she came to the Wellness Center and they've been a good ally with us for a long time. When they started, I don't know if you noticed on Fifth Avenue, right at Jefferson, right in town there, the Wellness Center has this big, beautiful building. Well, Michelle is in charge of that, and she was with Planned Parenthood when I first moved here. So I got to know her there, and she was on the AIDS Task Force. So I got to know her in several different places. So she has always been wonderfully supportive. And like, how can we be more inclusive? And so, you know, do you have names of books that would be good to have in our waiting room? You know, she's, and she was so proud of herself, and she got her open, I think it's an open sign that is, rainbow colors. You know, that's been kind of one of those little wonderful pieces in there. So she wrote me and said, we have somebody coming to us who is transitioning and we're looking for medical doctors help. Because she didn't know anybody in the area, so I didn't know either offhand and put out my feelers because I know a lot of people in Green Bay and Fox Valley. And so we connected and somebody is in Fox Valley. So that's a long way to go. And you have to go for counseling, you know, in those beginning stages. And so I think they've gotten permission or applied so they can prescribe the drugs that are necessary. And they got a counselor now who is his main focus. I think he's only here maybe two days a week. But his main focus is, well, gay and lesbian, but trans, including trans.
That's
so, so I know there's a few others in the community who have come out to me. One couple got married recently, legally married, because the partner transitioned female to male. And so So we do have all groups, but there's not groups for each, you know,
Right.
a group for transgender support and a group
Right,
for
right, right.
bisexuals or whatever. We all have to come together and support each other. But people in PFLAG have been very good about, open about accepting. PFLAG, you know, was a leader. They were the first national GLBT organization to say, we will not accept legislation that excludes transgender or gender identity.
Wow.
So, and that was just in 2000, right around there.
And how, this woman who's transitioning, how is she perceived or accepted or not into the community?
Well, she was a teacher, kind of in the midst of this transition. So I think last May or towards the end of the year, as she started more of her transition, and actually she did a letter of coming out to her principal and a bunch of other people too. And the principal said, we don't need you anymore. Just.
Fired.
Well, she was a sub, so she didn't have a job where a union might have protected her, but now that wouldn't even be possible anymore. But she was a sub, and they were calling her regularly, and he said, we won't be needing you anymore. That was his reaction to her letter. Now, her church has been wonderful. I mean, it's her dad that is the minister, so that kind of guides, directs, and he's been very supportive. His mom is very supportive. So she has a very supportive group around her, and I think that's contagious. And I'm sure there are people who don't like it, but even in our church, which is a very liberal church in the first place, and some people questioned whether it was even Christian, because of our last minister who talked a lot about Buddha and different religions of the world. When we became open and affirming, then we became the gay church in town. There were people that left the church when we voted. You know, it was a super majority vote, but still, there were those that didn't. But there were people, it was wonderful because we had the DA was a member of the church at the time. And so when we were getting ready for the vote and people are having this discussion, you know, some old guy gets up and says, it's against the law. And the DA stood up and said, well, that's been off the books for a long time, you know. So it's a divided community on that issue as well.
How has there been some growth in your church as far as like are there people coming to your church because it is?
Definitely. Oh, that has been marvelous. And just, let's see, when was it? Within the last year, I finally got them to put rainbow sticker.
Yeah,
It's
it's fine. I just couldn't
a
read it.
rainbow sticker on our sign outside. And right away, within a month at least of putting that up, the pastor got an email or a call saying, what does that mean? You know, now we'd been open and affirming since 2000, I think. I have that somewhere too. I can look up dates for you if you want. But you know, it's ONA is the abbreviation, open and affirming. I don't know that people understand what that means either, unless you're into churches and you know that. So and then I could only find postcards with a rainbow flag on it, so that's what we put up the first time. And so now, this year, that's faded a lot. And five people in the church have come up to me and said, can we get better rainbow out there? Mm-hmm. It's fading away. I was like, yes.
Of course.
Over there.
So that kind of progress, I mean, you know, the other people haven't come back to the church as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of moved on now. And there are a lot of people that are joining. As a matter of fact, about 2 months ago, we had four new members, and all four were gay.
Wow.
So I thought,
wow.
All right.
Yeah.
I took personal credit for that.
Yeah.
Not really. that was exciting.
Yeah.
Right. And one was a couple, and they're kind of out in a gay couple.
Mm-hmm.
So that's neat. There is a lesbian couple that comes to church.
Mm-hmm.
Like for special occasions.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And but they're not really out, and they're still teaching, so that is probably a factor. So.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think in this community it's easier for gay men to be out than for lesbian women to be out, or no?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's the Chanticleer and Trio have gay men owners.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pretty far out. I know a couple of groups or businesses that are lesbian owned, but they're not so far out.
Huh. So are these places... that you're referring to, what kind of places are they?
Well, Chanticleer is a bed and breakfast,
okay.
And they advertise in the Wisconsin Gazette and Quest, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Trio, too, I think. That's a restaurant
up
in Lake Harbor. But there are some gift shops. As a matter of fact, a friend of mine and a supporter of PFLAG works at the Door County Visitors Bureau.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And so he called me and said, we have a person from Curve Magazine here who wants
what?
To know. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, vacationing in beautiful Door County.
Right,
Indiana,
yeah.
And thought she could get a job in. And so she wanted a lesbian-owned business, and I could not.
Mm.
I called several people. I called other people who know other people. We couldn't come up with one for her. But the guys would have done it, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a difference.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to attribute that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Huh.
But she, the one I talked to, the one owner that I talked to, was like, well, you know, I just don't want to be known for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I want to be known for my art.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay, I guess.
Yeah.
You have to let people come out as they want to.
As they want to.
Yeah.
So, you mentioned earlier that you adopted a son.
Mm-hmm.
What was that process like?
Well, this was in 81.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of knew who I was, but I was not in a relationship at the time. So it was just me adopting. I don't think they asked if I was homosexual. And my social worker was very supportive. I think I probably could have come out to her. And she would have still, but I didn't want to put her in a position if
right.
she couldn't. And she really wanted me to match up with my son. I had been his teacher, and his foster parent was very supportive of me. She called me. I had worked with him the year before until he was older and moved on to another teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And so she calls me in the fall and says, are you still interested in single parent adoption? Because I had talked to her maybe that summer.
Mm-hmm.
Just because she's involved in the state and she's adopted a lot. And so I knew she knew a lot about the system. And I said, you know, does Wisconsin allow single parent adoption? And she said, yes, they do. And I said, oh, I might be interested in that sometime. And kind of didn't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then she called me and said, are you still interested? And I said, yeah, but I haven't really called anybody or done anything.
Right.
And she said, well, Shane is available for adoption. She was at the courthouse. His parents had just relinquished their rights, and she called me right away.
Wow.
And she called me at school because that was before the day of cell phones.
Right, right.
So she wanted to catch me right away,
tell
me. And I said, oh, well, Shane was kind of a special place in my heart. I liked autism, and that's one of his diagnoses. So I said, yeah, I'm still interested. And she said, well, call this person right now. So I did. And 9 months later, he was placed with me.
Wow.
So,
it's
kind of a way things should be, I guess, or something.
Do you think it would have been, how do you think it would have been different if you were trying to adopt with a partner?
Oh, well, I don't think in Wisconsin you couldn't both adopt.
Okay.
Because I know other adoption couples who they had to choose one of the persons to adopt. Now, I think they were open about being gay at a later point, but still couldn't. I don't know whether they can now. I haven't heard anything on that in a while.
Yeah, I don't I could check on it, but I don't think you can still.
Right.
I think
right.
it's still kind of a big loophole, and people kind of try to get around it.
Another reason marriage is important.
Yeah.
For, you know, for the kid.
Yeah. Have there been any initiatives to get a civil unions legislation on any vote around this area at all, or domestic partnership?
We do have domestic partnerships in Wisconsin.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a law saying that nothing similar to marriage can
right.
be.
We've
argued the point that the few rights that you get as domestic partners doesn't come anywhere near the thousand that you get as a married couple. So far, we haven't, but I think the present district attorney has said that he will not defend the domestic partnership law if anybody cares to challenge it. And they're certainly not talking about changing the constitutional amendment that we have.
How did that go over here?
That was terribly depressing. It was just amazing. That's when we started doing the Market Square on Saturdays in the summer. There's a Market Square here for the farmers market, and we have a P-flag table there now regularly. And that continues, which is wonderful that we've got enough people that are willing to sit out there on Saturday morning. But, you know, to sign the petition against the marriage amendment to bring up awareness and educate people about it. That's why we started being at Market Square. So we really worked hard. We got a lot of signatures, but it still passed. So that was heartbreaking, you know, and a big slap in the face of you are not for first class citizens. You don't have all the rights everybody does. And the crime of it is there were people who would have been supportive who just didn't think it would pass. Well, that's kind of what happened in our election in 2010.
Right.
So people didn't believe this would happen. I've been a League of Women Voters for a long time. And so I used to always just put out my League of Women Voters Vote It Counts sign. And after that election, I decided I had to give up being president of PFLAG and being the high officer in the league so that I could take a stand and tell people who to vote for. I'm trying. I don't know how it's going to turn out today.
So can you talk a little bit about your experience in the League of Women Voters?
Our local group and the league in general has policies that are supportive of gays and lesbians, not always necessarily mentioning them, but when the marriage amendment was proposed, the local league, Wisconsin League, took a stand against it based on equality, you know, and so I did a presentation based on the league's position to the league. Some people dropped out of league because league was supportive of that locally, I know. But we did present to the Rotary group, and our local league, well, one of those counselors that is our Safe Schools coordinator is the present president of the league. Several are school teachers that I've known for years, have been very supportive. So, whether, but the league positions are supportive too. So of equality and everybody gets a vote and everybody should have equal rights and women's rights. And so it's very supportive.
So going forward, what do you think, what do you see as being the biggest challenges in the LGBTQ civil rights movement?
Locally or in the whole movement?
Locally, locally.
You know, the advances that the rest of the movement make are just like doors opening a little crack around here, it seems. You know, if we could get gay straight alliances in the school, I would be delighted. I think that would be true acceptance, or at, you know, that, what is the hierarchy, not celebration and not even acceptance, tolerance maybe. You know,
right.
I feel like there may be some tolerance here. You know, it's don't ask, don't tell. You know, don't talk about it, we're okay. You know, you just go ahead and live your life the way you want, make your choices. But so I would like to see us move more towards acceptance. And I think, you know, nationally they're showing the polls that, you know, more than half of whoever's polled, you know, believe that we should have equal marriage rights or not be fired, you know, because of sexual orientation or gender identity in the workplace. That's up there. But here, it's slow to and I feel like that's part of our suicide problem. You know, you have no way of knowing except when you get reports from relatives who say, I think that was the situation. How many of those suicides are because of gay and lesbian? Now, I don't think that you know, any have been because of gay and lesbian bullying.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Fox Valley. There are
some
outright cases there.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't doubt that there's bullying going on.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had, you know, a few kids have come in, usually their senior year or afterwards, and reported such.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't look to us before that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether they know about us, you know. We
mm-hmm.
Right.
have a presence on the web, and we try to get the announcements in as much media as we can. But
mm-hmm.
it seems like we're always meeting people, too, who don't know we exist.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
How to get the word out is hard. And I'd like to see a bigger presence at the 4th of July parade.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's only once a year. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
Right.
But
yeah.
We send our newsletter to, well, I gave up the mailing list, and there were 200 people on it.
Mm.
Now, some of those may be from Green Bay, because there's no P flag in Green Bay either.
Mm-hmm.
And we go to the Green Bay Pride Alive and have a table and take signatures if people want to know what's going on.
Right.
So, and, you know, some of those addresses probably don't exist or aren't, there's nobody on the other end of them,
mm-hmm.
but they haven't bounced back to us yet.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But it's sizable. So there's interest, but we can't get them to come to the parade.
Huh. Do you have any questions you want to ask?
I have two questions. Okay, so my first one is, what grade or level of school did you teach when you were teaching?
Well, let's see. I started out, I got grandfathered into teaching early childhood education. So that would have been, because I was a special ed teacher, I could get a job as an early childhood educator. So 3 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started out as an LD teacher,
mm-hmm.
and then in Ashwaubenon,
mm-hmm.
and then moved up here to teach early childhood, and then moved to Madison, well, actually moved to Anago to adopt a child, to adopt my son,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
His parents didn't want him adopted in the county. They just thought that would be too hard to see him
mm-hmm.
running around or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So we moved to Anago,
mm-hmm.
and I taught there early childhood education, 3 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
And then they couldn't really provide a good education for him.
Right.
So I had an independent evaluation, which is your right. And
mm-hmm.
the Madison examiner said, move to Madison.
Yeah.
So I got a job when I could in Madison and taught a temporary job at the Mendota Mental Health Clinic.
Okay.
That's what got me to Madison. And then I got a job for a year in early childhood and
mm-hmm.
special ed in the schools.
Mm-hmm.
And then got a job in Sun Prairie teaching emotionally disturbed, which was what my degree was in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And then fell in love and moved back to Sturgeon Bay,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
became the early of the birth to three educator.
Okay.
So
yeah.
birth zero to 3 years.
Wow.
And that's what I retired from last year.
Last year,
so,
wow.
So this is a new type of.
Yeah. So I'm doing whatever I want to do.
Yeah.
Okay, so then my other question is, what has kept you going in your activism? Even just saying, writing letters to the editor, you know, and even, you know, being an active, very active member of PFLAG in this community where it's not very tolerable. I mean, what has kept you going with that?
Stupidity.
Right, a little bit of that.
I like banging my head against the wall.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I guess other things kept me here.
Mm-hmm.
And So I fought for the community to come mm-hmm. to its senses, and mm-hmm. still waiting for that.
Yeah.
But I've talked to my legislators, all of them. I've gone to see all of them. Well, not mm-hmm. the latest ones. I have written to them all, but I haven't gone to see all of them, mm-hmm. latest ones.
Mm-hmm.
Too frustrating.
Man. Do you think you'll see, you know, you've seen changes in
right.
your lifetime,
right.
but do you think in this community you'll see any of the changes you really want to see, you know,
in your lifetime? I don't know whether I'll see that big parade at the 4th of July.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll come to that.
Ah! Oh, okay.
Yeah, we'll come.
It's on the 4th of July. We line up at 9 a.m.
All right.
We'll be in the line.
Yeah.
Yeah, bring all your friends. I might see it sooner than I think.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Never enough, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like
mm-hmm.
always two steps behind
mm-hmm.
this community.
Mm-hmm.
And our global community is way behind
yeah.
still,
yeah.
you know? So there's a lot of work to be done. I don't think we're going to be out of a job and PFLAG anytime
right.
soon.
Right.
Yeah.
But I would love to see that we don't need a PFLAG
mm-hmm.
because everybody's open and affirming
mm-hmm.
and accepting and
mm-hmm.
supportive.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's not going to be seen.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything that we didn't cover that you wanted to talk about?
Hmm. I think you did a pretty good job covering.
Okay.
It.
You're fabulous.
Do you have any questions for us? While we're here.
So where are you from?
Well, we can't hear.
Oh. Yeah, I guess we'll stop.